part.
Is it? Are you Scottish?
My part Scottish, yeah.
I'm Irish.
Craig, yeah.
Ready? Mm-hmm. Are we just doing the health licensing office?
Smith is an office.
Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, February 17th, 2003, and we're doing a public hearing on House Bill 5024, which is the Health Licensing Office, and a public hearing on House Bill 5025, which is the fee bill for the Health Licensing Office. Before I begin, Mr. Olson, do you have any housekeeping announcements you would like to inform the present members?
Madam Chair, the only thing is from last week, I am trying to find out from some of these health-related boards the licensing practices of the surrounding states. And I've gotten a few responses from a couple of the boards, but I'll continue to gather them and compile them and provide them to the committee perhaps later this week.
Thank you very much. That's great.
And with that, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5024 and 5025. Mr. Olson, can you give us the LFO overview?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the subcommittee, good morning. This is the budget bill for the Health Licensing Office and the accompanying fee bill for ratification of fees that have been raised administratively during this current biennium. The overall budget is 10.7% increase over the 0103 legislatively approved budget. Again, the Health Licensing Office is a little different from the health boards that you've been hearing in that they oversee the operations of nine small boards or programs as an umbrella agency. They are, like the other health-related boards, all 100% other funds from fees and applications and examinations. There was one budget note that was included in last session's budget, and that had to do with the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. During the 1999 session, there was some question as to the financial viability of that board since there were so few licensees and the amount of the license fee that they would have to pay to sustain the board. There was testimony from members or from the licensees themselves that came forward and said they wanted to maintain that board and they were willing to pay whatever the cost was to do that. So Legislative Fiscal and the Health Licensing Office worked together and monitored that very carefully. This budget note had to do with reporting to the emergency board on the financial status of that particular board. The Health Licensing Office provided the Legislative Fiscal Office with a financial report, and it was during the time where the state was going through their initial special session and workload for the emergency board, and LFO was very extreme, and so in review of that financial report, Legislative Fiscal Office and the co-chairs at that time decided that it wasn't necessary for them to make an official report to the emergency board, that the report they provided to Legislative Fiscal was adequate, and that we could see from that report that the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery was financially viable and solvent, and so we accepted that report on behalf of the emergency board. No audits or interim reports or studies were completed. Again, there were some fee adjustments, and the accompanying fee bill will ratify those fees. The Health Licensing Office did come to the emergency board in November of 2001 for an expenditure limitation of $140,000 for various information systems projects. This was an issue that came up during the last session during their budget hearings, and the subcommittee asked the agency to go back and do some further review and then come back and appear before the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and then to the E-Board for that limitation, which they did. And that was approved as one-time expenditures. Like the other boards, the Health Licensing Office continues to have an increase in workload as the number of licensees grow and the population of the state grows.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Mr. Olson?
I'm sure.
Senator Mazur.
And maybe I could wait until we hear the program, but I'm just curious. I see in your report There's 45 standing committees. How many licenses do the does this board cover?
Total licensees. They maintain approximately 69,000 licensing records. A little further down in that report, down towards the bottom, you'll see that information. We've completed over 22,000 inspections of facilities, 2,000 disciplinary sanctions.
Madam Chair, let me rephrase my question. My question is, how many different types of licensing professionals does this board cover?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, there are 9 different boards or programs. They're listed there. And I don't know how many individual licenses types for each of those programs. They could probably address that.
Perhaps we could ask the director when she steps forward. Further questions or comments? Could we have Ms. Wilson and Ms. Geely and Adam come on forward and increase our knowledge base about the Health Licensing Office? Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Morgan and members of the committee, I'm Susan Wilson. I am the director of the Health Licensing Office, which, as Rick mentioned, was reorganized in 1999 by the legislature. The office provides management and regulatory oversight for multiple healthcare professions and occupations in Oregon. I have provided the committee with rather lengthy testimony as requested, and I will summarize that. We have a PowerPoint very short presentation that supplements the budget. It is focuses on just some high points of the budget. Marge Gailey, who is the fiscal officer, will be doing that slide presentation. In addition, I've provided sample brochures at the back of your testimony that give a little more information about how we handle complaints and a little bit more information about it looks like. Yes, these 2 brochures. Talks a little bit about how we handle complaints. So these are for consumers and for our licensees. Just by way of background on how we differ from the other health licensing boards, health-related licensing boards that you hear from, as I said, we were created in 1999, and that was to fix some discordant laws and sort of a hodgepodge of boards and put it under one umbrella agency. The agency operates as a single governing enterprise, and as that governing agency, staff provides oversight and centralized services for those groups of boards. The agency director has broad authority to carry out state laws within the governing agency, and unlike the other health-related boards, the director and staff are not appointed or do not report directly to the boards. My position was appointed by the governor, and I report directly to the Director of Administrative Services in the Department of Administrative Services. So those are the basic differences. The next slide is the agency mission. Our mission is to provide a strong and healthy quality of life for the citizens of the state of Oregon, and we do that by creating uniform public protection practices for licensing and regulation for health professions and some of those are, I would consider, wellness professions. Our goals are to build a customer advocacy organization, to regulate in a manner that supports positive business environments, and to provide excellent customer service. One of the items that the agency continually tries to do is identify opportunities that will provide us good customer service in the most effective way possible, and that includes exploration of our current regulations among the boards we manage and trying to develop any proposals for standardization on a continual basis. And we have one bill this session, 2325, that continues to do that. Organizationally, we were our one governing agency and a single program unit. The agency has administrative and management authority over 9 boards and professions, and rather than go into each of them descriptively, they are in my budget document on page 15 through 19, and that contains a description of each of the programs and professions. The agency licenses a variety of programs, as you can see from the list. They range from sanitarians, environmental health specialists, which promote and control infectious disease through the environmental hygiene and checking those areas of the environment, They work in the Department of Agriculture, Health Division, and County Health Offices. They possess a BS degree or a master's degree in environmental sanitation. Two, facial technologist, which is a cosmetologist. They go to a career school. They take 600 hours of training, specialty training, and they work on individuals' faces. They cannot go beneath the strata corneum, which is where the blood is, and that would be contained in the nurse's statutes. That gives you just a kind of overview of what we and who we license. And I also want to talk a little bit about the kinds of boards.
Senator Masley.
I don't mean to break your continuity here, but question. How many of those boards are voluntary licensed and how many are mandatory, required by law?
Chair Morgan, Senator Meserly, there is only one voluntary licensing program within our office, and that is direct entry midwifery.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
The varying types of boards are policy or governing boards, and that's the Board of Cosmetology to programs, which do not have a board. We have several boards that are also advisory in nature, and some share in how they operate within our office. Performance measures. Is there next one? Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Representative March.
Thank you. Before you get into the performance measure,
that
advisory capacity kind of caught. Who does regulate, say, for example, tattoo artists or electrologists who both do work that involves blood and those kinds of and potentially dangerous needles, etc.
Right. The agency does the regulation. The board, which is called the Advisory Council on Electrology, Permanent Color Technicians, and Tattoo Artists, counsels the director. But we carry out the sterilization, one-use needles, and they work on the rules and regulations in conjunction with our office. They'd be one of those examples of an advisory group.
Okay, but you do the
That's correct.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure somebody was doing that.
Yes.
Representative Bates.
In these types of situations, do you do any on-site inspections to see if regulations are being followed, that one-time needles are being utilized, and what is that program look like? We're having an explosion of hepatitis C, as you know, and a lot of it is from previous activity with tattooing needles, and I think most of that hopefully has stopped now, but what's your sense, and how do you monitor that?
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, I believe we've done an extreme outreach program. We've gone to universities and talked to college students. We've eradicated any unlicensed activity that has occurred. The hepatitis B, there was a hepatitis B outbreak from an unlicensed person during this last biennium, and we worked with the local state authorities, and that individual was also tattooing people that were underage as well. So we took care of that. That's one of our cases that we took care of. We're really proud of our program. We have inspectors, in answer to your question, that do actually go out and inspect facilities and make sure that people are licensed and have met the minimum competency and are using one-use needles or autoclaving in cases where they have any instruments that need that.
Bella, I was most concerned about hepatitis C, not B, and you just told me people are using autoclaves and not one-time use needles. Would you tell me some more about that, please?
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, one-use needles are the requirement. Autoclaving are for the instruments, any instruments that might come in contact.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Autoclaving is a tricky thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to make a mistake and not properly autoclave something. Even with the best trained technicians in hospitals and in doctor's offices, we are constantly having to worry about the fact that our autoclave may be not working quite correctly. My question is, we're talking about tattoo artists using autoclaves. Am I hearing that correctly?
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, I can get all the information to you, and I feel like I need to be more of an expert than I am.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. They do use one-use needles that are packaged, prepackaged. They use a... there are two kinds of tattoos. There are permanent makeup tattoos, and there are artistic tattoos. Permanent makeup is done on the face and generally in conjunction with a plastic surgeon or dermatologist. The others are done for artistic purposes, and you see them in all sorts of varying degrees of patterns, and they're very popular right now. I would need to get more information to you as it relates to the autoclave because I'm not prepared to answer that question. But we are meeting the CDC standards and all the standards as it relates to the federal standards. And I'd be happy to provide that information to you.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
That's
here,
okay. I just.
But if you can bring it to me later, I'd like to
happy
see
to
it.
Do that.
That'd be very interesting.
Okay.
And certainly something I wasn't aware of and kind of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of a concern until I get more information.
Okay.
But I appreciate you bringing that to me. And I don't expect you to be an expert in this stuff. And and I didn't know either, so thank you very much.
Please proceed.
Our performance measures are identified within lengthy testimony, but just basically, we were advised that our performance measures clearly articulated the agency's story and reflected measurement in the most result-oriented way. We're doing that in six categories, and these again tie back to our goals, providing an effective means for handling disputes, measuring responding to critical status complaints, and measuring providing stakeholders a forum for participation, and expanding outreach to educate both practitioners and consumers regarding health and safety issues, and removing artificial barriers to licensing, and assuring that the customer has excellent customer service. We did receive some additional information.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordon.
Thank you, and excuse my interruption in your presentation flow, but I would like to ask a question about the performance measures. I note that as I read through the your statement on affirmative action, you have some very detailed information about your long-range plans, describing your intent to increase diversity, your intent to particularly focus on women and minorities. There's specific language around the need for cultural training and specific language around increasing hiring and retention. Again, very specific language related to your long-range plan. Why is that language not reflected in your performance measures?
Chair Morgan, Senator Gordley, I can't answer that question. We worked with the performance measure group, and we were advised that the most important segment as it relates to performance measures is providing measurement back to the services we provide. If that is something Senator Gordley would like added to our performance measures, we could do that.
I would highly recommend doing that, Madam Chair, because we need a way of measuring progress in that regard as well. For example, if we look at the information contained in your report that reflects the makeup of the board and that also reflects the makeup of the staff, how we're doing with regard to numbers of people of color, and you list them as ethnic, and I'm not quite sure what that means. We have a long way to go. And it would be helpful if that information was also presented differently. It needs to be disaggregated by race and ethnicity so that we know that if we're talking specifically about Latinos or African Americans, Native Americans, Asians. We're trying to get a picture of what does the diversity look like in our various state agencies. Where are we making progress or not? So again, disaggregating the data helps us. But again, I also think that having a specific performance measure or measures that reflect what you say are your long-range goals would make all of this much more consistent for me. Thank you.
Mr. Olson, could you note that so that when we come to the performance measure discussion and work session, we can come back around and...
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll do that.
Thank you. Senator Messerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really interested in your department because I think this is a direction that we really need. I'd like to see the state go towards. I served on Health and Human Services in the Senate last session. I think one of the biggest problems we have in the state is too many licensing boards and the conflict of turf battles and all the issues involved there. So I'm really very supportive of combining boards and then having subcommittees on that licensing board such as you're doing here. But I'd like to see it happen more with physicians and the nurses and much broader. But as I read through your compliance report, I'm not making sense of where you're talking about the formal disciplinary actions. And it was going along pretty good until I got to the civil penalties, and then you've got 1,312. And so I assume that some of the complaints, there was more than one action taken. Is that what's going on there?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly. Yes, a civil penalty could accompany one of the complaints or one of the actions that took place, along with any sort of suspension or probation. But a civil penalty may be related to not having the correct infection control methods when the inspector was there and they were cited. They took care of the problem immediately. Purchased the correct sanitation or infection control, and there was a fine assessed. That fine generally is reduced through mediation, through discussion and making sure that the practitioner is taking care of whatever the problem was, and then the civil penalty then would result, the final order would result. So that's what that column is identifying for the committee.
Yeah, could I follow up, Madam Chair? So what I'm coming from, you had 452 complaints, and I assume that means complaints from your department itself, and of those there's what 1,500 or so actions that were taken from those 452 complaints. Is that right?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, I think you need to combine those two numbers. There are inspections that generate action, which may be civil penalty related, and then there are complaints from the public, other agencies. So they're delineated. Complaint as opposed to maybe an inspection issue that our enforcement officers may have picked up through a site review.
Madam Chairman, I think that's different than what we've seen than the way we've had presented in the past. And
yeah.
Maybe if we could break
be.
Those two
okay.
out so we'd have a clearer picture of what's really going on.
Okay. Happy to.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Madam Chair.
Well, I have a question before
oh.
but
oh.
I'll put you in the lineup here. Looking at your performance measures, you have several of them that have been in place since 2001, but we don't have any data. Can you talk to us about where the numbers are?
Chair Morgan, happy to do that. We just received some information from the performance measure group. We just developed these because we are a new agency and just had them in place. We are collecting information currently. I can bring information as we've collected since the date that we sent out surveys, for example, and been collecting and counting the information. But we just had our measures approved, and we're acting and reacting on those now.
So the first three of them, the data sources agency records.
Yes. Madam Chair.
Do you have any time frame in mind when you're going to have this information available to us?
I'm trying to ascertain if you're looking at the same information, because we did get some information, links to Oregon benchmarks back from this group. On what date did we get that? Friday night, and we can get that information to the committee and the information you're requesting. We just got current revised information that we can get to the committee.
So that's a revision that is different from the information that we have in our binders?
Okay. Yeah, came to us Friday evening.
I think we'd be very interested
okay.
in getting that information.
Happy to do that.
Representative Bates.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Chair. I apologize. I forgot to turn this thing off. I apologize. I'm trying to kind of put two different reports together. You've got, and I know I'm not going to refer them to, you've got workload indicators with 0103 disciplinary sanction post 1600, and you've got number of complaints received and the compliance report. And what I'm going to get to here is some feel for what kind of complaints you get and why there seem to be so many. Is just the number of licensees you have? Do you get complaints from the public? Do you get complaints from fellow practitioners? Is it stuff you've generated by going out and looking at situations? Are these just a lot of minor infractions, or do we have some serious problems you have to deal with? Kind of give me a feel for what you really do. Okay.
Okay. Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, I think all three categories would fit in that area. I'll give you an example with hearing aid dealers. We had an individual that was selling hearing aids and not delivering. We worked with the Justice Department. It was basically fraud, and we worked with the Justice Department on that particular case. There were over, I believe, 700 senior citizens involved in that case, and over $80,000 worth of merchandise that wasn't delivered. That's an example. Another example might be the hepatitis or pseudonymous was an issue that related to piercing of the ears. This happened, and we had a telephone call and conversation from the health department in that area because we were the licensing agency. We worked together with the health department, and three or four individuals had, as a result of the Pseudomonas outbreak, plastic surgery on their ears. They got kind of a cauliflower ear effect. Another example might be a parent calling in and saying that, isn't there a law that my daughter can't have a tattoo if they're not 18 years of age or 13 years of age or whatever. So those types of complaints are generated by consumers and also from other licensees. And we might have a complaint from the dental board relating to denture technology. So does that give you kind of a flavor of?
Well, Madam Chair, so there's no area that's really giving you trouble, sort of a broad, general, this is what we do, these complaints come in, we try to deal with them. There's no area of a special concern that you have right now.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, no.
And to follow with that, it looks like you have an increasing number of licensures coming on board all the time. It's almost exponential, 25% increases here over the next couple of years you're expecting. Is that because you're picking up new areas you're going to license, or is it just that you're getting more people requiring or asking for licenses?
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, I would just say population growth, two-income families, and people are going back to work. I think it relates to population growth primarily. Many of the programs provide services, and I think people are buying services at a higher rate as it relates to cosmetology, for example.
If I might, there appears to be two areas of concern here as it relates to complaints, and one of them appears to be related to the time with which the complaints are investigated and dispensed with. The other one deals with, I think, trying to organize the information in a way that we can see if there are issues in one area or another from the point of view of further education needed out in the field or that kind of thing. So what I'm hearing are people coming at this from kind of two different directions here. Senator Meserve.
Excuse me. I apologize. I didn't make myself very clear when I was asking the question before. It seems to me that we need clarification on what kinds of activity by the agency is taken from the inspections that you do and
okay.
what comes from complaints. We covered that one.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm not clear on, and I don't think the committee is clear on, is of all the different licenses that you are dealing with, we don't have a breakdown of the different nine different areas of where these complaints are coming from. And my guess is that you've got some of these licensures that are doing a pretty good job, and you've probably got some that have more of a problem than others.
And Representative Morgan, Senator Meserle, we have that information. We report it on a quarterly basis to boards, and we are happy to provide it individually for each of the boards, and I think that's what you're after.
That may be the easiest way to break
okay.
this down. Can you also make that note for when we go into work session, Mr. Olson, so we can give them better instructions than we did?
Okay, we'll break that down for the committee. Happy to.
Please proceed.
I believe we left off at performance measures, and we're moving into the organization of the agency. Next. The agency is organized around three divisions. Those divisions are listed for the committee and broken down on the slides. The first division is the Regulatory Operations Division. This division has two sections, licensing and credentials, which oversees and tracks training, and this will answer Senator Meserle's question. We license over 30 types of practitioners and businesses. So while we have nine boards, there are subcategories within those boards. It provides oversight and monitors national and state examinations. This section also certifies continuing education, and this information can be found on our website as well. The complaint and enforcement section, which the committee has been quite interested about, manages all the regulatory operations, investigations, resolution of complaints, determines jurisdictional authority, and manages legal services. And we can break down those complaints in an area that in each of the areas that you've mentioned. The Administrative Services Division ensures the high quality of program services and access to information. It connects people and programs. It does both external and internal outreach. This section works with boards and executive support, and it's our communication and outreach section that puts together the brochures and make sure that we have information out to our constituency.
So can I interrupt you here? What I'm looking at, under the Administrative Services Manager, you have a communications officer. Under the accounting piece, you have a public service representative. And then under the Regulatory Operations Manager, you have an imaging specialist. Can you talk to us a little bit in detail about what those three people do and why you need three FTE? I don't know what the FTE
yeah.
to the imaging specialist is, but it seems like an awful lot of people.
Representative Morgan, the individual that's called the program information person is actually a frontline person that sits at the front of our office and greets
and,
the public.
And is that the communications officer or the public service rep?
Public service rep.
Okay.
They actually are greeting the public. We have a lot of public come into our office. We also administer same-day licensing examinations. An individual can come in with the proper qualifications, their transcripts, and sit and take an examination and be licensed in the same day. So we have a lot of foot traffic. I have some performance and counts of how many individuals actually come through our office within
so
my
this is kind
testimony.
Of a front desk
the front line
person that does the triage on where to send people?
Right.
But why is it in the accounting department?
This is the accounting specialist. That's Keith's position. She verified the license.
You want to go ahead and speak to that? That's financially related. Is it all right if I defer to Marge Gailey? Who?
Yes.
There
yes.
we go.
Chair Morgan. The
for the record, would you please?
Oh, I'm Marge Gailey. I'm the fiscal and budget officer. Okay. The public service rep under the fiscal and budget officer is really a person who, we're a small agency, we do multiple tasks, but in this case, she verifies the licenses and she sends out licensing to each of the individuals. And then she has several accounting functions besides.
Okay. So what is the communications officer that's under the administrative services manager?
That is an individual that actually does the communication pieces, does all of our website communication, and that person is under the administrative services section, or my section, that she works closely with me.
So this person updates the website?
She does all the written communication pieces. The example of those would be these pieces. And on our website, you'll notice that we have some outreach pieces. She does speaking at the universities and the colleges and works with any of our associations and attends those meetings as well, along with me at those meetings, and speaks to educational pieces as it relates to protecting the consumer.
So how much of her job is outreach, and it'd be interesting to see a breakdown on her time and how much time she spends out of the office doing the education functions out in the community. So the system support specialist and your information system specialist don't do anything with your website?
The information support specialist does some of the operational posting of, say, minutes, agendas that are produced in the administrative section by the executive assistant for the boards. Now, those minutes are produced after each and every meeting, and then those are published by her and given to this assistant, who actually puts them on the website. I'm talking more in the range of design for the communications officer position rather than actually maintaining the information. So that particular position is the position that maintains that segment of our website.
Okay.
And provides user support if someone gets stuck on how their computer is functioning or there's a malfunction within the computer.
So the executive assistant and the board liaison are taking minutes of all the board meetings that you oversee, and then they're, I would assume, electronically transmitting that to the information support folks who are posting it on the web.
Once those minutes, yes, Representative Morgan, once those minutes are completed and approved, then that's what the that person would be doing. They would be sending those electronically to that individual who puts them on our website, and also the agendas, and does any updates as it relates to public information that we may have to apply.
Okay, bump over now to the imaging specialist that is underneath the regulatory operations manager.
Okay. And this is currently, yes.
Is that an FTE?
Yes.
A full FTE?
Currently, this is one of our package FTEs. We currently have pieces of an FTE, and we're asking that it be moved from part-time to full-time. So it would be increasing that current FTE from part-time to full-time.
And what's the job description for this position?
I can get that to the chair. It is a person that does all the imaging and for all of the programs within our office, and does front desk backup. And
what exactly is imaging?
Imaging is, we're trying to move to, as much as possible, becoming a paperless office. It's actually taking documents and imaging them into the electronic system. In the past, we have retention schedules from the Secretary of State that says certain items like transcripts need to be retained by the office, and we've done that on microfilm. the new technology is moving to imaging and doing that electronically and capturing the information and making sure we keep the information electronically. That's everything from a complaint that comes into the office. We have retention, certain retention schedules for those, to monetary transactions that come through Marge's section, and we have to cashier that information. And I want to point out the other boards you've heard from as it relates to monetary transactions. We are a little heavier in staff in those areas because the health division or other agencies may provide the cashiering and validation when funds go directly into the state treasurer for those particular boards. In our office, we actually do cashiering within our office. We have a secured cashiering area. The Secretary of State has checked our separation of duty processes to make sure we match those. And those sorts of things, like making the deposit and reconciling the information against the license, are done every day in our office. So that's where the staffing issues, I think, that you might not see with other boards come into play, because we're actually doing the cashiering and financial transactions within our office. Imaging relates to all those financial transactions as well. Those need to be imaged and electronically captured and then attached to a licensing number of an individual.
So this is essentially an electronic filing clerk.
Correct.
Representative March.
Thank you. Just to follow up on this imaging question, has the state adopted standards for imaging, and what are they?
Mr. Torgerson, can you help us with that one?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Adam Torgerson with Budget Management Division. I'm not an expert on what's going on in IRMD by any means, but I know that IRMD is working this biennium to bring forward some enterprise-wide imaging solutions, and I know the Health Licensing Office works with IRMD in their technology plans. I don't have a concrete answer. I can get one for you, though, if you'd like.
I would. I mean, one of the problems in the past has been multiple different types of imaging solutions, and the question of whether or not this particular solution is going to be time-sensitive, you know. Exactly. You know, do you save it on a CD-ROM, and we don't use CD-ROMs anymore. You know?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got four different documents in front of me here. I'm trying to figure out the FTE. Two of them say 28 FTEs total, and two of them, well, part of it was explained by the fact that the imaging specialist is one FTE, so that, as I add up, brings me to 27.88. So we're getting real close, but there's still 0.12 differential something.
Mm-hmm. Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, these are pieces of positions that are lodged within, if you're looking at the org chart in the shadowed area. But they are only one full position, if that makes sense. They're pieces of positions that reside in two separate FTE. Okay. We have 27.88 positions. We are asking for 28. We're asking to make that one position, or that one FTE, excuse me, full-time, but it currently will augment two positions, but it'll still be 28. Does that make sense?
So are you asking more than the governor's recommendation then? Because I'm going by the governor's recommended FTE.
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, no, we are not. We're asking for the same amount.
Okay. Follow-up?
Well, it doesn't add up, but I guess we'll work that out with
Senator
Gordon. Between fiscal and BAM, we'll figure this out.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought
that's
you were
fine.
Senator Gordon, did
Thank
you have
you.
A question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're talking about positions,
okay,
could you identify the positions that are held by people of color?
Help me, Marge.
Please, Jeff.
And Stacy, she wasn't counted. Accounting technician, public service rep under fiscal. In enforcement, Yvette, where's her position? Would be an enforcement rep. And then one that isn't counted is the communication services officer. When we did this count, she wasn't counted. Do you want cultural attachments to those? Do you want me to?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do the best I can. Communications officer, Hispanic. Accounting technician, Hispanic. Public service rep, I believe Vietnamese. Over on this side, enforcement rep, Pacific Islands.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
I believe we left off with, back to the org chart, I think we were discussing fiscal and management section, and that ensures that the agency-wide accounting and fiscal and budget operations comply with state financial management services. It's responsible for the budget. Cash management is kind of the area I talked about in making sure that we're cashiering transactions and getting them into the state treasury under the right accounting procedures. Purchasing controls, property controls, central supplies, and so forth.
Do we have that in our presentation somewhere?
It's under your org chart. We're just kind of doing part of my This is part of my testimony, and it's on page 7, which I just dropped on the floor.
Okay.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think I'm okay. And it also corresponds with the organization chart. The agency and boards are linked to promote effective health policies to protect the public, and we do that by establishing as many safeguard programs and consumer standards as possible. Basically, I've concluded this segment of the PowerPoint presentation, and I want to point out that the piece that you're seeing up there right now is on our webpage. We have visuals as well as a listing of the boards, so it's easily maneuverable on our webpage. We make sure that complaint screening, investigation, and measuring outcomes are constantly going on. We think our performance measures will showcase that for the committee. The agency provides training and education and outreach around all the regulatory efforts, and we've highlighted those particular outreach pieces on page 62 of the budget document. Primarily, the budget issues that are driving this year's budget are related to what Mr. Olson had identified, and that's increasing population and increasing numbers for our facilities, our business licenses, and practitioners. Those graphs are also found within your book and on page 9 of my testimony. Just to give you a snip of the information, during the 2003 biennium, staff will conduct 3,574 examinations. Once again, we do that on a walk-in basis for many of our programs. They have a touchscreen electronic environment, which they do a multiple-choice examination that we administer on-site same day, and we offer the license if they meet all the criteria. We also have clinical and national examinations we provide individuals. Those are generally mandated by the testing company. Any sort of means and the way we produce those exams would be mandated by whatever national we're using. We conduct approximately 10,000 licensing requirement reviews. These would be initial licensing requirement reviews. They may require checking transcripts or if they're duly licensed in another state, if they have any enforcement activity that they're carrying with that license before we would license. So we do 10,000 of those a year. We issue 7,743 original authorizations, maintain nearly 70,000 files of licensing records. And when I don't want this to get confused with how many licensees we have. We try to get as clear of a picture as possible on the number of active licensees. The 70,000 files could be a person that's in an inactive state, may have moved away, but we need to keep their file for a certain number of years. They may come back and relicense. So that's where the 70,000 number comes from. We process 91,250 fee transactions and receive about 93,000 telephone transactions. And once again, an item that we're proud of is we've currently received 1.2 million hits on our website.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mezley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to come back to the question I asked Rick earlier. The standing committees of 45 initially seemed rather high.
Okay.
What is the, and I don't know if this is the correct time to ask this, but
fine.
Part of the organization.
Sure. Representative Morgan, Senator Mezrely, the breakdown that is given in our budget and on the page that you're referencing that I think Rick reproduced, subcommittees may be a part of the full board. The board may meet three times a year. The subcommittees may be a rule subcommittee. It may be an enforcement subcommittee. It may be a continuing education subcommittee. Those individual committees would meet on specific items identified during the biennium, so we don't have to actually call the full board back. When the board needs to take full action, we would take it to the full board. But the subcommittees actually keep the day-to-day workflow working. It's maybe a person that a staff, if they're on the continuing education committee, a staff person could call and ask about a specific continuing ed piece that is baffling them, that isn't clearly identified in the information that was provided to the office, and we approve those programs. We might ask for consultation from one of the subcommittee members, and that would, those are those subcommittees.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
So those are separate meetings. They're not when the full board is meeting?
Correct.
And could we have a breakdown of what those committees are? And the, I guess where I'd really like to go is the expense of putting in those committees. And those subcommittees meet how many times a year?
Representative Morgan, Senator Mezrely, I'm happy to give you, by board, if that's what you'd like, when those subcommittees meet and an example of what they might meet on. Many times they're done through conference calls.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Senator Mezley, just to kind of paraphrase where you're trying to go here, you're trying to break out the administrative costs of the health licensing part of the function from the operation of the individual boards. Is that where you're coming from?
I think so. It seemed like a high number of standing committees, 45, and I'm just trying to break out the cost of what it was. And if there's a potential maybe to combine some of those committees and get the job.
Further questions?
Are you finished? I have just a little more. I can be finished if you'd like me to be finished. Some of the other
we have plenty of time.
Okay.
Who in his heels there?
Thanks.
Some of the other budget issues are of course, related to making our services as good as possible and as efficient as possible, and our policy packages address those, and Adam will be addressing those later in his testimony, and that has to do with the policy package related to part-time, increasing the part-time to full-time, and some classification corrections that Department of Administrative Services conducted over this biennium, and then package 102, which will enable our improvement of our customer service and allow the agency to continue our operations under a standardized Oregon plan through the enterprise system. Our strategic plan, or our business plan for the upcoming years, are to continue to promote education and training and outreach. Our focus is on prevention through consumer education and making sure that public protection piece is out there for consumers to hold on to. And I do want to point out that we make sure that the Consumer Bill of Rights is on the back of our brochures and a part of our website, how to file a complaint, and that's this item, complaints and enforcement process, and then the Consumer Bill of Rights is on the Health Licensing Agency overview. We are continuing with our integration with Department of Administrative Services on the IS portion and making sure our website and all of our electronic information is current. We want to be in a place in the future that allows us to do electronic payments, and so we can be available to our customers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If they've got the information and they've got a credit card, they can license easily with our office, and the same with our access to information.
Some of the reorganization issues that have happened since we were created in 1999 is the Board of Athletic Trainers became a mandatory licensing program, and also in 99 our office was established as an oversight agency.
Senator Gordley, you're looking like you have a question.
No.
Thank you. Representative Morgan and Senator Gordley, would you like me to continue with the affirmative action report since we discussed that earlier? I can speak specifically to compliance with Senate Bill 786.
Madam Chair.
If you would. Please.
Okay.
Thank you.
The report that was requested under the Senate Bill 786 actually did not apply to this the professions within our office, and I know Senator Gordley is aware of that. She and her staff worked with our office, I believe, during the implementation of this bill. So we're not included, but we believe very strongly that we should maintain contact with the organizations, Black Affairs Commission, Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Asian Affairs Commission, Disabilities Commission, and Commission on Women, and we will continue to treat this issue as it is important to us as well, even though we're not mentioned in that bill.
And, Madam Chair, if I may say so,
yes,
the leadership role that your agency has taken on is a very critical one, and it's much appreciated.
Thank you.
And noted.
We've also looked at the compliance report. Would you like to move forward on that? Or the compliance report was a suggestion, I believe, by one of the committee members that each agency provide this to the committee. We're happy to provide the additional information that you've requested today to extract some individual information, pieces that are not easily identified within this report. So I'm happy to give that to the chair and the committee members.
I would hope that you would bear with us as we work through these issues. The benchmarks and the data gathering piece of it, of course, are very new. And I think what we're trying to do here in part is look through the eyes of future committees that are going to be looking at this information and try to make a judgment about how the information can be presented that it would be most useful. So this is definitely a work in progress here, and we'll be talking about it as your budget works its way through the process.
And Representative Morgan, we would appreciate any feedback because we want to tell our story in a manner that is understandable and does connect back to the measurements for it to be a valuable tool for us as well. So I appreciate that. The final report was a prioritized list of services. We went through the exercise of being a large agency and having programs, and we identified those as 1, 2, and 3 items. They basically match our organization. We don't have programs as do larger agencies. So that concludes my testimony. I'm happy to answer any specific questions or any questions that may have emerged.
Representative Smith.
I have a question, generally speaking. I don't expect you to have the answer to that.
Okay.
I am struck by, as we go through all these licensing boards, I keep hearing one continuous theme, and that is we have an increased number of licensees. Our workload is higher and higher and higher. This is also at a time in Oregon where our economy is going down, 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 down. Can somebody explain the correlation to me on that? I kind of don't understand that. I find it a strange anomaly that there's all this increased business when the economy continues to spiral downward.
You want to take a stab at it?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I'll try. In the case of cosmetologists, when the economy is at a low, generally cosmetologists, professionals, step because they're second earners of incomes in families. Mm-hmm. And so they go back to work. It's okay. One of those practices that you can return to work after some length of time of being off. So that would be my answer in that case.
So, well, that would make sense to me in that case. Yeah, some of these other health professions, I'm just curious why that is.
Respiratory care, I can say, because they're in the medical arena. I think that, like nurses, and I just think there's a shortage. So
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, also Representative Smith, with the demand for these positions and all the regular, you know, the healthcare industry, their salaries are also going up, so it makes it more lucrative to go into these professions, certified nurses assistants in nursing, especially a position that would be less desirable in a better economic time becomes more desirable.
Same with respiratory care.
No.
All right.
Thank you. Further comments?
Mr. Torgerson, we'll hand the ball off to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Once again, for the record, Adam Torgerson of Budget Management Division. I'll be going over the BAM presentation, which looks like this. On the second page of the presentation, you can see the historical context for the Health Licensing Office. When the governor looked at this agency and some of the others, the decision was made not to artificially constrain the other funded budgets. It wasn't that any less review occurred, but an agent's proposals that include stakeholders and decision making and enable the agency to fulfill its mission were not denied, just denied increase. And in this particular case, this agency's done a lot of outreach to its stakeholders and had public meetings in the Veterans Affairs Auditorium, sent out notices to the stakeholders to be involved in this process. So we take that into account, that the representatives for the professions as well as the agency have done a lot of work in preparing this. The third page talks about what the budget does in a high-level sort of overview. The budget wasn't reduced during the special sessions. It continues the current program levels with several changes. The agency takes over completely its own fiscal services from the Shared Client Service Division or section of the Department of Administrative Services. It reclassifies some positions in accordance with DAS recommendations.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Are you reclassifying those positions because you've taken over fiscal services from DAS? And your workload's more or whatever?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't believe the two are related. The positions were reviewed by the Human Resources Division while the agency was using DAS services, and it's just at the same time the two things are occurring.
Okay.
The agency is also upgrading its database and e-commerce functionality. They're working with the Information Resource Management Division of DAS to do that. And what I'll do also while I'm getting information on imaging, I'll get an update on the e-commerce progress from IRMD as well. The budget changes the licensing structure for cosmetology. It includes changes for the license structure of cosmetology. It also aligns regulatory structure among professions. It increases fees in two sections and decreases fees in another section. And it's entirely other funded and comprised of one program unit. If you turn the page, it just shows the breakdown between personal services and services and supplies. It's pretty much in line with most of the health licensing boards as far as almost about a two-thirds to one-third split. The next page shows that the agency went to the emergency board in November, and most of the expenditure limitation that was granted at the e-board is actually phased out. Those were for one-time database improvements. Also included in the budget as part of the essential package 020 below, an additional $10,000 was phased out to capture some of the efficiencies that the new database system will be providing. As far as inflation and price list adjustments, the only unusual thing in that is that the agency is taking over its financial services, so that there's a reduction in the state government service charges as a result. And you turn the page to the policy packages. 090 is analyst reduction. That puts expenditures from last biennium in line with sort of the starting point for this biennium, and that was about $100,000. The agency's split it up, lowering their employee recruitment and some services and supplies. The first policy package is package 101. That's the reclassifications that we spoke about. They deal with workload issues. There's also reclassifications that DAS Human Resources recommended in there as well. The second package is their information technology package. They're working with IRMD to allow web-based transactions, remote access for staff. Also, it enhances the network's infrastructure to enable e-commerce when IRMD comes out with e-commerce packages. Policy package 201 is the improved business practices and regulation package. It creates independent fields for cosmetology because, as I understand it, the agency can probably speak better if there are specific questions. Our cosmetology license is sort of unified. Other states have separate licenses, so this would help relieve some disconnect when folks from other states come in or we go to other states. It would help them be licensed easier. It also allows the agency to inspect electrology facilities and create a fee for that. The estimated revenue is in there. It's highly an estimate because the agency is unsure as to the effect of the cosmetology split, how many folks are going to get, you know, different kinds of licenses or not. It's really hard to tell right now. Under Package 202, Uniform Agency Administration and Regulatory Structure, the agency goes through the statutes related to some of these boards, and they make the discipline process pretty much uniform and the same so that the same process occurs throughout the whole agency.
Can I interrupt you for a second, sure. Mr. Torgerson? For the education of the members of the committee, could you outline the areas that you're breaking cosmetology down into for purposes of licensing?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Let me give a little
cover to the
chair. I don't know what these people do, and I was kind of embarrassed to ask. Okay. Go ahead.
Happy to do that. In 1977, there was a major piece of legislation that combined the Barber Board with the Cosmetology Board, and there are four phases of education within those fields of practice, and let me enumerate those. Facial technology, nail technology, barber, and hair. So there's four. When they did that, they actually have educational and training programs that are specific to each of those areas, or you can get an entire license that does all of those things. When they did that in 1977, they didn't separate the licenses to correspond with the educational and training fields, so now you get a bundled license. You can do all four of those things, but you get a bundled license. What we're proposing to do is what they should have done in 1997, and that's make each of the training pieces match the license. And the reason Adam suggested that it's difficult to itemize what people will end up doing, because some people may choose, if they don't use a certain license, not to renew that license once we separate the licenses. So we don't know what the revenue forecast is going to be. We want to make sure it stays as revenue neutral as possible. We keep our revenue base. So that's why I think there's a little bit of vagueness in this particular package. Did that answer your question? Would you like more information about what they do? I'm happy to do that.
Thank you very much, and you tell me later.
Okay.
You probably don't need barber or...
Yeah, we have to do a barber.
You knew
the
that.
Barber.
I appreciate that Representative Bates has opened the door to allow me to ask this question. Is special licensure required for hair braiding?
Chair Morgan, Senator Gordley, no. It is part of the hair license. You are a licensed hairdresser. You can do hair braiding. There isn't a separate license for hair braiding.
Must be a licensed hairdresser.
That's true.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Further questions? Please proceed.
Okay. So I'll move on to page 8, which is policy package 203, body piercing. The agency increased fees. It does raise the cost for businesses, but it makes it much easier for them to manage their workforce, because previously the agency, body piercers would need a separate certificate or license for each place in which they practice. And for some of the larger groups, that made it more difficult for them to conduct business and transfer staff among their locations. And so this fixes that. It's a $40,000 revenue impact, but it makes it much easier for the businesses to actually perform their function. The denture technologists have a fee increase. It raises about $36,000 in revenue. The way the agency works, it has a central oversight administrative piece, and this agency needs to increase their fees to pay for their services they're getting from the central administrative function. The next page is page 9, fee or revenue changes. It outlines the four changes that are in packages 201 through 204. Not included in a package is the respiratory therapy decrease, and the total decrease in fees is going to be about $58,000, decreasing initial and renewal licenses for respiratory therapists.
Questions or comments for Mr. Torgerson?
Chairman, this isn't necessarily a question to the band staff, but we've asked a lot of questions here today, and at least for my part, I think you're doing a fine job. I am really intrigued and very positive about combining boards such as we're doing them, and I would be very interested in if we can break down in some way. I don't know how you can make this meaningful, because I know there's a wide variance in the type of licensing that we have in the state of Oregon. But the cost of a license per license, in some way, if we could compare that with when it's managed like your department, as opposed to, we've seen so many small boards come through here already from this committee, and it just seems to me there's room for a lot of efficiencies if we can figure out. For my part, I'm trying to understand how your system works, and I'm very interested if we could apply that to other boards and combine them.
That would be a really good management tool. Rick is indicating in his comments.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I did notice a piece of legislation that was introduced. It happened to come across my desk last week, that requests the Health Licensing Office to study the feasibility and cost effectiveness of bringing the Board of Nursing in under the Health Licensing Office during this next biennium, conduct that study and then report back to the 2005 legislature. And I don't know what the status of that bill is right now. I know it's floating around out there. And if it's the committee's desire, perhaps we could even broaden that to include other health licensing boards and study the feasibility of doing something like that.
Madam Chair, I'd like to even go beyond just health licensing boards and see if there is, if we can group these different licensing boards together in some way, and just in administration and in the technology field. I noticed that almost every one of them, I think every one of them actually had an IT staff on board, and I can just see a lot of ways, audits and everything else, that we can combine this.
So are you looking kind of conceptually here, Senator, at some kind of data gathering effort that would show a cost of issuing a license out of this agency and then out of all of the other individual agencies, so you could kind of see where the trip point is, where it would be better to consider flipping them over into this agency?
Yes. I mean, I understand that they're not all going to compare equally, but it would give us an indication. Well, just a cost per license would be a start. There's reasons for the variance of cost, I'm sure, too, but at least we could start.
I would think that if it could be done in a reasonable way, where you were really comparing apples to apples, that it would be a great management tool. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, thank you. If you start looking at that kind of a situation, and you and I know there's going to be some minor turf battles that might occur, but there's also some things that, as I've gone through these boards, I've always wondered about, and I would like to have you look at what some of the boards have under them. For instance, the Board of Medical Examiner has acupuncturists under them and physician's assistants, but nurse practitioners are under the nursing board. And I've never, and then you guys got respiratory therapists, and I assume that's the associate degree people primarily. I mean, it's just a hodgepodge of these people being plugged in different boards that never made much sense to me. So besides looking at bringing boards together, you might look at what some of those boards do and see if them would be, some of them would be appropriate to bring on your agency and move it, sort of incrementally towards a bigger single board, as the good senator has recommended. It might be worthwhile to bring logical groups under your board. The other question I guess I have is a little wider one. What's been your experience? Having one single board for all these groups, is more efficient and more effective than what you had before? Or is it just sort of a hodgepodge that's becoming unmanageable? Kind of give us a feel for what that might be. Take a look at it over the next year or two and come back and let us know. We're really getting some efficiencies. Is it making more sense? Mm-hmm. or is it so diffuse that we're actually losing ground? I mean, I can see going either direction. I would have a sense of going to a single board is the best one to go to as a policy. But I also don't want to create a new bureaucracy that we can't figure out again, too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is that a rhetorical question?
What I want you to do is give us a summary or the next year or two, not right now, of what you think your experience has been since 99 or 97 since you started combining these boards. Is it working? Is it more effective and more efficient? Or is it a hodgepodge you can't get your arms around? Okay.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. I'd like to follow up on the hair braiding question that I raised earlier and would like to know, if you could do a little research, I'd like to know how other states deal with the hair braiding issue, particularly states that have a higher African-American population. Hair braiding is a particularly popular style in the African-American culture, and it could be argued that in a given salon, the art of hair braiding can be handled without a license, that the actual work of preparing a client's hair for hair braiding could be done by one technician, but the actual braiding is something that could be handled without a license. But I would like to know, if you're following my drift, I'd like to know what the experience of other states has been, and states that have a higher population than we do, more experience with the issue.
Further questions or comments? We have no one signed up on the witness registration sheet for public testimony, but if there are any people out there that would like to come forward and testify, here's your chance. It doesn't look like there are an awful lot of people rising to their feet right now. So if there are no further questions or comments, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5024 and 5025, and we'll give you a little bit of a heads up about what you can expect. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is on deck for tomorrow, in my understanding. And Mr. Olson, do you have any idea where we're going from here?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. After the Board of Psychologist Examiners tomorrow, you actually will start in on the education agencies. And Wednesday and Thursday, you have the Teachers' Standards and Practices Commission before you for public hearing on their budget bill. And then the following week is the Student Assistance Commission, and then on into more of the education agencies after that.
In our chairs meeting on Friday morning, there was discussion around possibly rearranging the schedules this week to fit in with some meetings that we were going to be having to educate us about the issues relating to bringing the 0103 budget down for a landing. Has there been any further discussion about that?
Madam Chair, there has been some discussion. No final decision, at least when I came in here at 8:30 this morning, had been made. The talk right now, the possibility at least is that there would be a block of time set aside for those kinds of discussions for 0103, and all the schedules of all the subcommittee would be bumped back so that it doesn't cause more conflicts, at least in our office, for agents or for analysts such as I, who have budgets in front of five of the six subcommittees.
A good time.
It was quite a challenge for all the schedulers to work that out to begin with. So,
well, and I think that one of the things that we're very thankful for is the willingness of the LFO staff to pull way more than their share of the weight around here. I know that there probably hasn't been a weekend since session started that quite a few of you haven't been toiling away down in your offices. And we appreciate that very much.
Madam Chair, we thank you very much. I will say that someone asked us on Friday if we were going to have a good weekend, or at least it was Friday, and our comment was, well, it means that tomorrow we don't have to wear ties to work and we can park on the street for free.
I'm wondering, Madam Chairman, to correct your statement, probably since the end of 2001 session, they haven't had a lot of weekends free.
Well, I know that we spend a lot of time here in the interim, and the LFO staff and the revenue folks and the people that write the bills were putting in a lot more hours than we were. This was not what you'd call a relaxing interim for anyone.
Madam Chair, Rick, could you get a message to the psychologist board tomorrow? There may be a question about, and probably will be a question about, granting privileges to psychologists to write limited prescriptions. Mm-hmm. That's a topic that's heating up, and it's one we might want to discuss them tomorrow.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, committee members, I will give you a little warning that the psychologist board is without an executive director right now. And so the person that's going to be here making the presentation is actually the clerical staff.
Oh, no. Okay. I feel sorry for him.
Anybody from their board?
I'm not sure. Well,
Madam Chair, I also have the board of psychologists. There'll be one person from the board there, but it's not someone who's been real in-depth in helping out with the administration while the executive director's been gone. So I'm not sure how much help that person's going to be.
Further comments? So please be prepared for a short notice schedule change. Otherwise, we will adjourn this meeting and reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.